Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Jeremy Shaw joins me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. And amongst everything else, Jeremy, tonight, and by the way, hello everybody who is trackside, already a great crowd on a Thursday, never mind who might turn up tomorrow. And possibly even on Saturday morning. Amongst everything else that is going on tonight, setting lights up, making sure your car goes well in the evening temperatures, we've got quite a number of drivers who have to, and I quote, qualify for night running. Explain that for us, please, Jeremy, if you would.
Yeah, it's not everybody races at night all of the time. In fact, most people don't race at night time very much. So in order for the drivers to be ready for this, it's a completely different animal to running at this racetrack during the daytime. It's not nearly as well lit at Sebring as it is at Daytona, for example. And so IMSA requires that all the drivers who haven't driven around this racetrack in these sort of conditions to at least become properly, give them an opportunity to become properly acclimated. So they require them to run at least three laps, basically, in the what is termed the nighttime session, even though it's not yet dark, with the clocks already having changed here for this year. And there's 35 drivers of the 111 in the starting field that are required to turn some night laps. No real surprises amongst them. There's nobody from the DPI ranks that is required to do a refresher, if you like, at night. So it's mainly the lower classes, the lesser classes, and the lesser experienced drivers. And that'll be the first priority for those teams that have drivers who do need to do their three laps of quality and get those three laps done, and then concentrate on getting ready for the race. And this, of course, is a really important session, because a goodly portion of this race will be held after the sun goes down.
Humidity listed at 60% at the moment. That's Florida for you. Track temperature and air temperature has evened up now as the sun has started to sink down behind turn 17. That's why it's called sunset. Around about 28 Celsius, that's what, 82, 83 on the Fahrenheit scale. Shea Adam is our VP Racing Fuel pit and paddock reporter. Just starting to get a little bit of temperature inversion, so the cloud just rolling in a wee bit as well. 35 drivers tonight qualify. Do you have a list, and will you be ticking them off?
I do have the list. Would you like me to read it off?
No.
Okay. Yes, I will be ticking them off. As Jeremy said, very straightforward. If you're a bronze driver, you have to do your night laps. If you're a silver and you haven't raced here within the last, I believe, 2 years, might actually be last year, though, then you also have to do the laps. And there were two names on the list that jumped out to me in particular. Zachary Robichon is on the list, as well as former Sebring winner Christina Nielsen. So those are the only two names that sort of made me go, huh?
Yeah.
Because I thought they should both be fine for the night driving. But in any case, they will both be getting their night laps in. Robichon actually behind the wheel of the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche already. And in doing some talking within the paddock between the last session and this one, a lot of people are confused at their cars, because almost the entire grid ran test days in between the Rolex and then this week. A lot of variety in terms of the performances that they had in the test and what they're seeing today. I had to remind quite a few drivers who are a little bit downtrodden that conditions as they have been today, much hotter than what we will see in the race. And if your car was good today in the heat, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be good when it cools off, 50 degrees from what we saw at peak heat today.
The green flag is that, huge lockup by the Wheel and Engineering Cadillac on its first lap out of the pits. now. Who was that? Was that Pipo? I think Pipo. It was Pipo, yeah. Pipo Durrani in that. Or Peter, obviously, as I called him earlier on. At sunset on race day, clocks have sprung forward, is 17 minutes before 8. 7.37. No, I was right the first time around. 23 minutes before 8 in the evening is the sunset time. And bear in mind, we'll be running till a little after 10 o'clock local time. So that tells you we've got quite a bit of darkness running. Drive through for Pipo Durrani, Shea.
He left his pit box a little bit too early. So, yes, Peter Durrani heading back down the pit lane. I like that. I think it's going to stick.
He's going to kill me.
Get out there.
Can't fault his enthusiasm. He's going to kill me for calling him Peter. I don't know even where that came from. Just couldn't get my mouth around what I was trying to think quick enough. So we have a 90-minute session here, Jeremy. Depending on who you are, who your drivers are, and how you feel your week is going, some teams might be out there till the bitter end. Some people might do an hour or so and then decide that's that.
Yeah, you know, as Shane was saying, you know, a lot of these teams have been here testing to get ready for this weekend's race. Of course, you know, last year's 12 hours wasn't this time of year last year. That long ago. It was only, 4 months ago. So, you know, a lot of these teams are pretty well prepared. But as Shane was saying, you know, this track is very susceptible in terms of how it affects the cars in terms of its temperature, and particularly the wind as well. It was pretty windy earlier on this afternoon. I think the wind has dropped somewhat now. And as Shea's saying, that the weather, the temperature is a bit cooler as well. I'm sure it's going to drop 50 degrees, but it's certainly a little bit cooler now than it was earlier on. So it is going to be a different kettle of fish. The number 31 car has been quickest in both sessions so far. This morning, the best lap by Felipe Nasr was 146.2. In the later session this afternoon, it's also Nasr on top there, with 47. It's a whole second slower in the heat of the afternoon compared to the first session this morning.
It's Jeremy Shaw. He's joining me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. The side-by-side action with the new liveries on the Corvette down by the hotel at the hairpin at Turn 7. And another GM product, Cadillac, going by was the 0-1 of Kevin Magnussen, the Cadillac Chip Ganassi racing car. Very interesting press release from Corvette earlier this week. Times here, by the way, are for interest, and they're not setting grid, so we'll have a chat about various things that's been going on. In the announcement about Corvette only doing one WEC round before Le Mans, and therefore not doing Portimao, just doing Spa, and the prologue and then the Spa race with Antonio Garcia and Ollie Gavin. There was also a couple of paragraphs, I think, that were really interesting. I'm going to sort of paraphrase them a little bit. About the potential for them to continue with the GT Le Mans, the GTE car, beyond the end of this season. Now, they can't do that in IMSA because there will be no GT Le Mans next year. There's going to be two GT Daytona classes, a Pro and an Am class. And the wording of the Corvette press release talking about, you know, we can still race against other manufacturers in the WEC and at Le Mans, and you know, very likely that we're going to do that. Now, it didn't say that we're going to do the full series, but the likelihood is that the C8R, which is still, let's not forget, a relatively new beast in that category, the newest of the current crop of GT Le Mans GTE cars. The other thing that was interesting was that there was no commitment to a GT3 program, and the wording basically said that they were monitoring that, and some talk about what platform might be used in GT Daytona here in IMSA, and whether that would be a Corvette, possibly a Camaro, possibly something else from the GM stable. So I did think that was quite interesting, that such a big supporter of IMSA didn't take the opportunity, Jeremy, when they could have, to have said what they're doing in IMSA with GT next year. Clearly, we expect them to continue at least for one more season with the Cadillac DPIs, and what happens with LMDH. Now, that could be a Corvette rather than the Cadillac. And then, would you race two Corvettes? Would you have a GT car in GT3? Would you have a Camaro in GT3? They've got plenty of portfolio to do that. But there wasn't a definite article of commitment to racing a GT in IMSA next year, which I thought was a bit odd.
Yeah, it was strange, wasn't it? I guess all I can really say in response to that would be watch this space.
Well, true.
As you say, we certainly don't expect them to be anywhere but in this series. But they for some reason they've elected not to make any public announcements at least yet. And the sooner that comes, the better, I think. But it's certainly curious that they should choose not to have done so yet.
And there was some suggestion that the current CAR could be, had been, built with the thought that it could also be a GT Daytona, a GT3 car share. Corvette aren't shy about racing, potentially even racing themselves, as they have done in IMSA competition in the past. I can't imagine IMSA without a GM brand in it, and I kind of can't imagine IMSA without Corvette in it, to be honest.
No, and I completely agree. The thing that I was reading in terms of why they didn't want to go necessarily to a GT3 platform was more so about providing customer cars and making the requisite 20 vehicles in the span of the season.
Good point.
They're not prepared to do that. I don't think there's ever been 20 versions of any Corvette down throughout the years. I think the highest chassis number I've ever seen was about 8. So it would be a departure from the norm for them. But they did also say that they are active in discussions with IMSA as to how they can continue to race within the series. So don't hang up your Corvette fan flag just quite yet. I'm like you. I need to see those yellow, well, this weekend, silver beasts in the paddock to make it feel like IMSA.
Yeah, I see a Tahoe, maybe, or I don't know, GT3 version. We'll keep an eye on that, and the good folks on both sides of that, both at IMSA and at GM, GM Racing, of course, Laura Wantrup-Clauser, who has given some of her time to us over on Midweek Motorsport on RS1, was very clear that everything was still on the table when we talked to her a couple of months ago, after she'd got her feet under the table at that new role for her. And for any manufacturer, Jeremy, it's about maximising the marketing opportunities, and therefore with somebody like GM, who have several brands and multiple platforms within those brands, you've got to get the right brand and the right platform, and by that I mean the right model, into the right area that you feel that you can get the best ROI, is what the marketing people would say, and the financial people, return on investment.
Absolutely right, and that is critical. I mean, motorsport is not cheap, so there's going to be a fairly substantial outlay, whatever it is you do, at whatever level. There's a lot of factors to be taken into account before any firm decisions are made, and you're absolutely right. There will be different branches of the company that are involved in Correct. Making a decision. It's not just the motorsports director's job to say yes, we're going to do this. There's got to be clearance all the way up and down the chain of command. So it's a difficult decision, and particularly perhaps in this day and age. I think the financial situation is certainly looking quite good right now, but everybody in every industry pretty much has had difficult times over the course of the last 12 months. So to be looking to spending a lot of money on a new program at this stage, isn't perhaps as easy as it might have been, let's say, 13 months ago.
And by the way, you can listen to Laura talking to me about the future for those GM brands. If you go to imsaradio.com, on the left-hand side of the homepage, it's the top of the features column, and I'll get that tweeted out from IMSA Radio as well, that link as well. So you can either listen to that on demand or you can download it to your favourite device. All of the archive on imsaradio.com is absolutely free. Right, we've had 10 minutes or thereabouts. Let's have a look at some times. It's Acura from two Cadillacs, from Acura from Mazda from a Cadillac in the top six. Now, good news is that the 48 Ally Cadillac racing car has gone out with Jimmy Johnson at the wheel, which is what it did before. But when Kamui Kobayashi got in, he pressed the throttle too hard and broke it, or something. They had some throttle problems. We've all been there, honestly. So Jimmy's done five laps, which is exactly what he did at the start of the previous session. But we've still only got six of the seven DPIs that have been out. So who's missing this time?
No. Luke Duval.
Say again, Shea, sorry?
The Mustang sampling car, Luke Duval, is on his first flying lap. They did pit stop practice for the first few rounds.
Thank you. That's why we have Shea as our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Reporter. Kevin Magnussen goes to the top. What an introduction to sports car racing for K-Mag. He really is special, K, Jeremy. Obviously, he knows what goes on. It's not as if he's come into a blind. He's watched his father down through the years. And quite clearly, as a driver who's been at the very top of World Championship racing for Formula One, he's got some silky skills, and he showed them off very well, I thought, at Daytona.
Yeah, it was a good, very good debut for that team. You're back in the prototype ranks after, what, 5 years or so away from it. You wouldn't have known they'd be gone. But, of course, they had some problems in the latter stages, so didn't get the result that team definitely looked like it was going to get and probably deserved. But it was a very, you know, a very good opening round for them. And look, with only, you know, seven cars in the class for these first few races at least, if you don't have a, you know, if you don't score well in the first race, you still score, worst case, seventh place points. So it's not a massive disadvantage going into the rest of the season. It'd be much worse if there were 15 cars in the class and you finished 15th, you got 15th place points, you know, after a bad day. So, you know, this is, that's, you know, they're very much in the mix here. They'll certainly be looking for a strong run here this weekend.
Great to hear the sound of race engines in the gathering darkness at Sebring International Raceway. Back straight, and Magnussen with the front brake discs, the rotors glowing red hot as he turns into turn 17 all the way out to the wall on driver's left, and then pulls it gently just diagonally across the concrete on the front straight. The concrete, my goodness, if that could talk, if we could get some audio samples out of that, Jeremy, we'd be set for quite a while. We'd not have to do anything other than sit and listen to it. That is exactly as it was when Sebring first had racing there. Exactly the same concrete.
Yeah, a lot of grunts and oohs and ahs, yeah, ouchies, I would imagine, yes. as you're leaping from bump to bump there. And look, you know, for K-Mag, boy, is this a different kettle of fish. I mean, you know, Daytona was a bit different for him, having been in Formula One for the last half a dozen years. But to come here to Sebring, and this is a completely different animal. I mean, no similarities whatsoever for what he has done for the rest of his racing career up until now. You know, he won't have raced, I think, probably anywhere on a track even vaguely as bumpy as Sebring. You know, respect the bumps is the motto for this racetrack. And he'll have had a... not a... let me rephrase what I was going to say there. But he'll have a, you know, steep learning curve to get used to it. But, you know, clearly he's up to speed right away. He's already done a test here. Actually did a shakedown here before, at Sebring, before the Rolex 24 in January as well. So, you know, he's got a goodly amount of laps around here now. I'm sure we'll be, well, as comfortable as you can get around here.
As comfortable as can be expected, is the, that would be the medical term, wouldn't it? When something nasty's happened to someone, how is he as comfortable as can be expected under the circumstances? 47.745 for Kevin Magnussen. Also out at the moment, Jimmy Johnson for the Ally Cadillac number 48. He's just he's turned a 150.9. Let's go through the other classes as well. LMP2, Scott Huffaker in the PR1 Matheson Motorsport, number 52, has the best time there with a 54.0, 54.3 for the Era Motorsport. Number 18 car in second. And it's the win car in the pits. Oh, just come back out the pits again. In third position, that's the number 11 car with a 55.5. Antonio Garcia is... Sorry, Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, we've got the wins car that's fastest and the win car that's third at the moment.
Very good. I like see what you're saying there. Very
the wins livery car.
Yes.
PR1.
Very good. I got that.
John?
Go ahead.
Lexus just lost a wheel. The number 12 Lexus. I just saw a wheel bouncing separately from the car.
You spot
on. Don't know where he is on track. Turn three.
It's turn three. And also sideways and facing the wrong direction. Coming out of the final corner, Jimmy Johnson goes straight to the pit lane. So that's Christensen, Tom Christensen curve. So out of turn one, through the kink at two. And... the wheel's already making its bid for freedom. My usual saying here is it's never a good day when parts of the car are doing different lap times. And the wheel harmlessly goes into the barriers. Unfortunately, that number 12 car has stopped. And what happened to Jimmy Johnson? Just lost it on the bumps through turn 17, not the first. Yeah. And seemingly not... the last as well.
What is it you like to say? We've all done that before.
Oh yeah, everybody has. Everybody has. Let me just continue to run down the times. Through the classes, because I think we're going to... Oh, we've got a red flag, so that's a perfect time to do that. So where were we? I'd done GT Le Mans, hadn't I? Yes, I had. Antonio Garcia. So LMP3, Spencer Pigot for Riley. And that's the best time there, a 157.7. And then it is, scroll down a little bit, because the classes are all mixed up in that midfield area. It's Riley Motorsports, number 91, with a 59.1. And in third, Stan Goldberg for Performance Tech, the number 38, the 159.372, last time around before the red flag came out. GTT Aaron Tielitz in the other RCF GT3 Lexus for Vasser Sullivan, the number 14 car, ahead of Trent Hindman for Wright Motorsports in the Porsche, number 16 in Heart of Racing. Aston Martin with Ross Gunn at the wheel. Sarah Rigby up in crew would be delighted to know that, as she's doing her ironing this evening. It's getting on for 10 minutes before midnight in the UK. It should be a relatively quick fix. A little bit of a flatbed moment. They can't flat tow that car back. And an odd one there for Frankie Montecalvo in that number 12 GT Daytona Lexus, Jeremy, with the right front wheel disappearing. Shea, update on the 35 who need to do their night laps.
By my count, and this is completely unofficial, I would like to stress to anybody listening in the pit lane, 17 of the 35 drivers have completed their night lap requirements. So we still have 18 of you left to go, and you know who you are. It's a bit like when you get called to the principal's office. You know what you've done. Yes, you know who you are, who still need to get the laps in. Interesting to note, we have not yet seen lap times from the 24 BMW. John Edwards took it out and brought it straight back into the pit lane. And Rodrigo Salas doing the same in the 83 win, the LMP3 machine that they're running this weekend, the Duquesne.
BMW, do they need the laps around here?
They haven't won it since 2011.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Okay. Yes. I suppose it's always good to get a few laps. But, you know, there is too much of a good thing around here. You rattle your drivers a bit more than you need to. You could try a bit of setup and make sure your headlights are pointing in the right direction. But if they are, that's fine. And once that's done, it's a beautiful evening with, as I said, a little bit of cloud cover temperature in the air just dropped another degree Celsius, now down to 27, so that's about 81 Fahrenheit. Track temperature holding up at between 82 and 83 Fahrenheit, 28 Celsius. That Michelin tyre on the wheel is now a lot closer to the Lexus than it was. It was the right rear that disappeared. I thought it was a front wheel. My apologies. But the wheel nut, the lug nut in the middle, the centre lock nut is gone. So it's not as if the hub has broken there. They're just underneath the bonnet at the moment, looking to see how they're going to get that car recovered. Yeah, the wheel nut's gone. It's not as if anything sheared off, but the wheel nut is not there. What I don't know is how many laps he'd done before this happened.
That was his outlap.
It was the outlap, was it? Yeah.
Frank Montecalvo had taken over from Robert McGuinness, who was finished with his night lap allocation.
I could have sworn that was a front wheel when I saw that originally. So that's even more weird that it's overtaken the car. Wheel is intact. Not much wear on the Michelin tyre. I think they probably used that one again, to be honest. So, everybody back in the pit lane, Jeremy, and the usual riot of colour down there in the Sebring pit lane.
Yeah, it's a great shot, isn't it? The nighttime here at Sebring, for some reason, it just looks even more special, I think. There's nothing like the same amount of lighting as there is at Daytona. And just makes it that much more stark, really. So the teams themselves have to often will light up their own particular pit stalls, and it's a great place to be. There's so much atmosphere at Sebring, all the way around the racetrack, but even more so, I think, on pit lanes.
At IMSA Radio, by the way, RSL at Sebring, hashtag RSL Sebring. And at IMSA Radio if you want to get in touch, whether you're at the track or further afield. There are a couple of FM frequencies as well around the track. I know you're listening to us on the PA system, and thanks to everybody at Sebring and to Tyler and the IMSA Tech crew for making sure that everything is linked up. WWOJ carrying us this weekend for the race, and there's a track FM frequency as well, I believe. Thank you to Roger for our pictures this evening. Good to see that the illuminated palm trees at the entrance to Turn 3 are back. That is a staple at that area of the circuit, and good to see them back for this 69th running of the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring. This is the third free practice. We're counting down towards about an hour to go, just over an hour to go. Teams just waiting to see what's happened. And whilst we're just mentioning a few unsung heroes, hello to Doug and our hard-working tape apes, as the old saying goes. I know it's not tape anymore, but I say that with great love for anybody who works in tape and replay. It's a very specialised job, and without the excellent work that they do, our broadcasts, both in sound and vision, would be much the poorer. I think we've got rooftop rear on the camera at turn one as well this weekend. So he's looking back into the pit lane at the moment, and yeah, we have, because he's just wiggled his camera. Thoroughly enjoy working with Ray, and once again doing that 3-hour night owl shift between 3 and 6 local at Daytona, when NBCSN were kind enough to loan us their airwaves as well. Also, Tess and Alison, who have been around this form of racing for a very, very long time. Tess is down on 6. Rachel's down at 8. Storley's on 5. God, these are all names that we've worked with for many, many You know, we talk about I'll be here on four as well. Excellent. Thank you, Keith, for that. We talk about how important it is to get consistency in a race team, whether it's drivers or the team. Well, our camera operators, some of these names I've just mentioned possibly won't like me reminding this, but when I came as, believe it or not, a fresh-faced newbie back in 1999 to do the old DLMS, these were some of the first people I worked with and learned the game with some of these names. So thank you. Thank you very much indeed for everything you've done for us down through the years. We've got Turtle on 10 as well. Huge amount of work that goes in behind the scenes here to get these broadcasts done, and in the current circumstances the technical side of things is even more convoluted, shall we say. Scratch is on 9 as the Lexus is disappearing behind the wall. We'll be able to go green any second now. Corker on 2, Buffy on 3. I should have written all these down, you know. Who's on first? Yeah, well, Rear is on first. We know that. Rear is on first. Duffy's on 11th. I now need this on the wall so that I've got everybody's name on there. And we've got a camera meeting going on live. Right, well, that's filled a bit of time. And also, you know, when you're walking past these guys, give them a wave. And the whole team work very hard in rain, hail, snow, or whatever sunshine it brings. And it's a really specialised job. And without their knowledge of motor racing, and I say that genuinely, they are all motor racing fans. They are all IMSA fans. And without their knowledge of what's happened in the past and what's happening now, we simply wouldn't be able to do our job. And one of the craziest cats ever, who is also one of the most innovative pit lane cameramen, is Morrow, of course, down on pit lane. So thank you to all of them. We're back underway, Jeremy. About an hour and 2 minutes to go. And plenty of takers back out. There's that little pause in proceedings has allowed it to get much darker, actually. BMW number 25 out. Am I imagining this, or is there slightly more lightning towers out the back this year, or have I just not noticed it before?
You might not be imagining it, but also remember the last time we raced at the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring, it was November, and there were no fans in the infield, and a lack of fans made it much, much darker. So
that's a very good point.
That's definitely going to play a point.
No, that is a very, very good point. Down the back straight with the BMW number 25, the Rahal Letterman Lanigan BMW. Just turning in, that's the red car. And penalties coming in. Shea, what do you know?
Leaving the pit box early for all three of these cars, necessitating drive-throughs. Car 79, that's the WeatherTech Racing Porsche. 33, which is the Sean Creech Motorsport LMP3 machine. And car number 48, and no, that's not Paul Miller Racing. Don't come down the lane, guys. Learn your new number. It is the Jimmy Johnson car that we were talking about a little bit earlier with the throttle issue. I love the idea, John, of Kamui Kobayashi just pressing the pedal a little too hard. But the good news is that two of the cars are currently serving their penalties. That would be the 48 and the 79.
I've done that before. I have done that before. I have pressed the pedal so hard that I bent the pedal mechanism. I'm claiming it was already defective, but eventually it broke. Simple as that. It wasn't returning properly either, so every time I lifted off and before I heel and toe to change down through the gearbox, I had to hook my foot underneath it and drag it back up again. Couple of new towers on the back straight this year, I'm hearing, to make life a little easier for everyone concerned, including our camera operators. How they follow the cars in the darkness when all they've got is bright lights coming at them, I have no idea. Let's take a look at some times. Jeremy, there will be people In fact, I know that Blue Fiend is walking the track at the moment as much as you can on the in-stream, at the infield. So let's have a look at some times. How are we doing for lap times at the moment? Let's start in DPI.
Yeah, in DPI, the fastest time set by Kevin Magnussen at 147.7. So still a second and a half away from the best time of the day so far. Olivier Pla in second place for Meyer Shank Racing. That's the Acura kind of a 60, just a couple of tenths slower. Another tenth back to Mike Conway, who has actually, Pippa Durrani was set the time in kind of a 31, third quickest. Jonathan Bomarito in fourth position for the Mazda team, kind of a 55. In LMP2, Scott Huffaker just improved again in number 52, 152.402. Second fastest was Kyle Tilley in the Era Motorsport caliber 18. Dwight Merriman driving that car at the moment. And Stephen Thomas, who set the time third quickest in LMP2 in car number 11. That car now driven by Thomas Merrill, who is one of the drivers who does need to complete his three laps at night. I think he probably has done so already, I would imagine, by now. In GTLM, it is Antonio Garcia in the Corvette car number 3, ahead of Philip Eng, BMW car number 25. 157.0 against 157.6 for the BMW of Philip Eng. Nick Tandy, third place in GTLM, the second. The Corvette's car number 4, 157.8. So quite a margin between those two Corvettes at the moment, more than three quarters per second. That's unusual. Spencer Piggott is the fastest man in LMP3, in car number 74. The second of the Riley Motorsports engine, car number 91, is second quickest. Dylan Murray has set that time, and it's Jim Cox driving that car right now. 157.7 is Spencer Piggott's time in the car number 74. The best time this morning was by Jeroen Bleckemolen in LMP3 at 156.9. So that time for Spencer Piggott, yeah, within a three quarters of a second of that. It's not bad going at all. In GTD, it remains the Lexus of Aaron Tielitz, caliber 14, tops the charts. He turned a 2:01.6. That's against the fastest time earlier in the day of a 2:04. So again, about three quarters of a second off the fastest times in each of the classes at the moment, John.
Thanks, Jeremy. Jeremy Shaw with me, John Hindhoff, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. And just a reminder, as I've mentioned Hagerty there, we will be having our post-race hour-long video show on Tuesday of next week. So giving you a chance to get the Mobile One 12 Hours of Sebring out of your system and probably catch up on a bit of sleep, depending on where you are in the world. That's 1 Eastern. 1 Eastern on Tuesday. So get your break sorted if you're at work. Make sure you've got your lunch break. Guests TBA, but our guest wrangler, the responsible adult, has been absolutely on top form in our Hagerty shows in recent months. So I think you can probably say that we are going to have somebody, a set of guests again that will be impressive. 1 o'clock Eastern on Sunday. Got a AMG GT3 car driving around with its hazards on at the moment. That looked to me, Sheer, like it was the... Now, I think it was the 28.
It is. And it's Billy Johnson behind the wheel.
Right.
Billy is a very heads-up, very cerebral driver. I don't think it would go unnoticed to Billy if his hazard lights were on. So that tells me that he's done that for a reason. Perhaps there's just a lot of prototype traffic behind him and he's trying to give him a heads up. But Billy is somebody who lives in Florida, takes a lot of pride in shaming Florida drivers. Driving with your hazards on is illegal, Billy. So if you're not careful, you're going to wind up on your own Twitter account there.
Problem is, it's not like a street car. You don't have big warning lights for it. he may have had a small issue and knocked them on and now has forgotten, or depending on where the switch is, he may have knocked them on by accident and now not know. I did drive half a lap with my hazard flashes on in a 24-hour race at Corter once, until my race engineer said, "Why have you got your flashes on?" "Oh, yes, because I'd had a spin on somebody's oil in the darkness and the lights went out because I had to stop and restart the engine. And it was very dark over at turn 13 at Corter. And I thought putting my hazard flashes on was a good idea. But then, of course, in all the excitement of getting started again and not being hit by traffic, you forget to turn them off. And that can happen even to the most experienced of drivers. Although I can imagine it will be putting people off, as through goes the 48, Jimmy Johnson for the Allied Cadillac. What I don't understand is why the team, Shea, aren't telling him.
Well, either they're punking him by not letting him know. He might have a radio issue. Actually, that might be his way of letting the team know that he's not able to hear them. I have sent a text message off to Daniel Morad to try and get an answer on this, but it could be as simple as he doesn't have radio communication and that's his way of letting him know.
I do like the green LED over the header bars, over the top of the windows and down the back. There looks like it also almost looked like the back as if it's got green antlers on it when you see it from some angles. It's just the way the rear wing supports and it interacts with the back end of the car. See what I mean? As it goes across the start finish line, looks like two green antlers on that car. So we'll have to remember which car that is. It's quite funny because he's got it on. He's got these LED lights all the way down the back of the car and then also on the wing supports. That's quite funny.
As somebody who is in the pit lane when it is pitch black and you see all these headlights coming at you, the teams do this to try and distinguish their car to make it easier for their pit crews to know when the car is actually coming down. If you just see a bunch of bright headlights, you don't know which one is your bunch of bright headlights. The teams will do the different illuminations over the windows, over the doors. The only thing that's mildly confusing to me is that one of the Lexuses runs green over the body panels as well. And so to a far-off eye, they might not look too dissimilar, but hopefully the crews know which one is which.
LED lights have absolutely transformed darkness racing. Jeremy, you and I go back far enough to remember at places like Le Mans where they would have used just coloured lenses on, you know, whatever they could get, maybe an indicator lens or something from a street car, tack a couple of those onto the roof and put different coloured lenses on so that you could distinguish the car coming down the pit lane.
Yeah, it's a very different world nowadays, isn't it? The technology is incredible. I mean, you know, headlight technology is just astonishing now compared to even what, maybe 10 years or so ago, let alone years ago when I started out anyhow. It's remarkable and it looks great too, doesn't it? I mean, all these different colours on the cars. Yeah, fantastic.
Helps us in the darkness as well to be able to, you have to make a few notes on the on the paper, still using paper. Jeremy and I are that old, still using paper.
That's the 83 car, though, isn't it? With that purple hoop.
Correct.
Is it?
I think so. Yes. Let me see again as they come down under the lights. Yes, spot on, Jeremy. I thought you were right. See, Jeremy has been taking notes as it goes on. Thanks to Andy Blackmore, by the way, again for the fabulous spotter guide. Always handy to look through there, particularly on the team cars where there's slight differences. And Andy being busy again. If you're at the track, then they are available there as well. Really, really helpful. So we reckon there's only a handful of drivers as the Jeremy talks about the 83 and it spins. Don't tell me it's going to be one of those weekends, Jeremy.
Yes.
That was at Tower.
There's no alphas in this session.
Well, yes, absolutely. came into it backwards. And seventh place in class for the LMP 3 car. I thought they were a good addition, Jeremy, in the Rolex 24. All right, you know, longevity was always going to be a bit of a question mark, but here at the 12 hours, we should get, I think, a little bit better. And those LMP3 cars sound absolutely fabulous rumbling around.
Yeah, they do, don't they? You know, bigger engine this year compared to last, 5.6 litre in those cars, the VK56. And, LMP3 has really taken a stride forward. And unlike years past, particularly over here, where the norm was an absolutely dominant force, Now it seems to be pretty close between the Ligiers and the Ducanes. And the Ligiers perhaps had for the most part, had a slight advantage of Daytona, except, of course, it was a Ducane that won pretty convincingly. Last weekend in the IPC race here at Sebring, it was, Ligiers who were slightly the better off. So we'll have to see how this pans out during the race. But it's certainly, good to see that it seems to be a much more level playing field now than it was for the last few years. The second generation car from Ligier certainly is a big step forward.
I noted as well with interest in press releases this week, as we were talking about them earlier on, that Ginetta is setting up a US hub and centre as well. Now, of course, you know, they do all kinds of GT cars, but they also do prototypes as well. And I noted with interest then that Lawrence Tomlinson is putting a US side of the business together, and Ginetta North America, I think it's called, is being set up, and that can only be good in terms of supply of parts of cars and of servicing customers, Jeremy.
Well, absolutely right. I mean, there's a huge market over here. You know, Radical, there's a lot of Radical cars running. They're not eligible for this series, of course, but there's a lot of Radicals over here. They've got a pretty extensive dealer network all the way around the country. And it makes sense for Ginetta to do the same because, there is a potential here. And, there is a Ginetta, at least one LMP3 car over here. It has been since the start. It ran, I think, though, just a one race. It wasn't driven very competitively in that first race. We haven't seen it since. But there is, I believe, now a car that ran in the Asian Le Mans series, wasn't there, over the last month or so ago in LMP3. And hopefully we'll see a Ginetta over here, and hopefully we'll be competitive with these other two class cars that are currently running. But, there's five eligible cars at the moment, but just the two do we see in action on a regular basis in the US.
46 minutes to go, and no change at the top other than, well, the time hasn't changed, it's still a 1:47.7, but Scott Dixon has climbed aboard and has just left the pit lane in the 0-1 Chip Ganassi Cadillac. Durrani still behind the wheel of the 31, people Durrani that would be. Ollie Plart has just gone out in the Meyer Shank car. All of those three have just left the pit lane, by the way, and there are 0.2 of a second between the top three. Another 0.2 back to Ricky Taylor's car. He's just come into the pits in the number 10. Then J-Bomb in the Mazda. Then Fortier and then Kobayashi. So we have now got all seven of the DPIs in the top seven places. Next it's LMP2. PR1 52. Win Autosport number 11. United Autosport, Wayne Boyd's just pitted that car in third position. Timothy Bouret for Tower Motorsport in fourth, and Dwight Merriman for Era Motorsport in fifth place. So they're all in order. GT Le Mans, they've got an LMP3 in the middle of that, Spencer Piggott. So Nick Tandy and Jonathan Edwards needs to speed up a bit. We've got full course yellow again. This is a practice share, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So basically what IMSA has done is they have changed the procedure for full course yellows and for quick yellows, where they have instituted after the DPI class split, in which the DPI cars move to the head of the line, a prototype class split, which then brings the LMP2s and the LMP3s to the line behind the DPIs. Now, the only thing that's sort of tricky with that is that the LMP2s and the LMP3s are not allowed to pass within their ranks. They just have to move to the front sort of as a cluster, if that makes sense. But then they'll be ahead of all the GT cars. So IMSA, for these practice full course cautions, of which they did one in the practice session earlier today, this is, in effect, they choose a leader, they send the safety car out to pick up the leader, and then they go through the entire procedure as if this was a normal full course caution. So we'll see who the Corvette decides to pick up as the leader. It doesn't necessarily have to be whoever's fastest on the timing screen. And then we'll lose about the next 10 minutes to practice while they go through this entire rotation.
Gives people a chance to see it in the dark as well as the light. The safety car is a white Corvette C8. And it is rolling at the moment out of pit lane with the appropriate lighting accoutrement front and rear. And the leader it has picked up is the number 48, Kamui Kobayashi, in the Ally Cadillac. So they have designated that car as the, in quotes, leader. Of course, this is a practice session, but imagine it's a race. And if you weren't with us earlier on, slight differences to the process of getting back to green to split up the prototypes and the GT cars to try and make things a little easier on the restarts. Jeremy Shaw's a big fan of the palm trees we were talking about earlier as well. It's a tradition, isn't it, Nev? It really is. It's become that. Say again, Jeremy?
Are there more of them than usual?
I think they've added a few this year. They're spot on where they need to be. I think that's up at turn three, isn't it? Where they are. Whilst we have this full course caution, opportunity for Shea Adam to bring us a VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Report. Who have you got for us, Shea?
Well, you know, it's typical that in the springtime, Canadians tend to come down from Canada to central, perhaps the west coast of Florida, to enjoy a bit of sunshine. Daniel Morad, is that why you're back in Sebring, or is it a little bit something more?
Well, it's great to be back in Sebring, back in Canada right now. It's pretty cold. So, yeah, definitely not complaining being down in the sunshine.
Now, you guys ran at Daytona in the Allegra Motorsports Mercedes, car number 28. We were just giving you guys some praise at the beautiful lights that you've got on the car. So it's not new for you, but how much does it help when the cars are coming down the pit lane and you can pick out your machine because of the green lights that you've put on the roof and, in fairness, on the tail?
Yeah, well, it's always difficult to spot your car in the crowd, but luckily the AMG is quite unique in its body styling. But the green lights on the top definitely help. It's something that we've used in the past in IMSA, and I don't know if you guys just saw there, that was obviously an intentional tactic to have our four ways on because we wanted more airtime, clearly, for Nano to have a little bit of a little bit of spotlight there. But Billy obviously new in the car, he's had one race under his belt in the AMG at Daytona, and unfortunately did not know where the hazards were, so we had to guide him on the radio. It was like, it's in the middle of the dash, push the big red button. No, I'm kidding No, he actually got it in the end, and thanks for showing your car so much, guys.
So beyond figuring out where the hazard button is in the car, what is the program for Allegra tonight?
Yeah, well, right now we're working on some long runs. That's something that we never really, with the Mercedes being a completely new car to Allegra Motorsports and the limited testing due to, obviously, the world pandemic, it was a bit challenging to, in Daytona, get some long runs in uninterrupted. So that's more or less the plan right now, is try to get a little bit more data, see where the tires go, the Michelin tires over, an hour stint. Hopefully we can get that in. And, maybe I'm going to drive a little bit. But, that's more or less the plan. And aside from that, we're just going to send it. And one thing I want to do, if I have the time, I just want to say a quick shout out to my Twitch community, because they all said that I have to say hello to them because they're listening right now.
Daniel, it's Hindhoff in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. This gap that we have, even in a normal year, between Daytona and Sebring is probably one of the longer gaps we have within the season. What have you been filling your time with since the Rolex?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a strange year. I'm thankful that I'm driving again. I really want to thank Allegro Motorsports for bringing me back into the program. It's been fantastic to drive with them, and obviously with Mercedes AMG as the new manufacturer of choice for the team. It is really nice. Daytona was a bit of a struggle, but nonetheless thankful to even be there, and thankful for all of our help and IMSA's protocols and how they're handling this. But outside of the track, I'm doing a lot of virtual racing. I'm sure maybe you've seen it was surprisingly quite big news that Mercedes signed me as an official esports factory driver. So I'm driving officially for them on the simulator, and that's something that I've been really putting a lot of focus into this past year when the pandemic started. So I've been constantly upgrading my rig at home. I participated in all the IMSA esport races, the invitational. So that's been amazing. And I'm really looking forward to the next one as well. I love the real deal, the real car. It's great. But also the esport stuff is amazing because you can really connect with the fans. I live stream all of it as well. So as I'm racing, I'm talking to people and trying to read the chat and trying not to mow the lawn too much. But in my spare time, I've been picking up landscaping, apparently, virtually.
You're very good. Very good. The IMSA Pro Series restarting April 8th, if memory serves. Daniel, I'll throw you back to Shea in a moment. But there will be people listening here who know very well, as we're about to go back to green shortly, so we'll get this over so you can go back and do some work. Know very well that GTD, GT3, is a balance of performance class. So when a team changes a car, what's the point of that? Because ultimately, surely they're all supposed to do the same kind of lap times. Do you notice the difference between the way different manufacturer cars make their lap times or how easy they are to get along with?
Yeah, I've been privileged to drive, quite a few different manufacturers over the last years with Porsche, Audi, Mercedes, and also the Lexus. I made a one-off appearance last year. And they all get their lap time in such different ways, which is what makes the GT class so unique. Each car drives so differently. Engine plates are different. You have some cars with rear engine, some cars mid-engine, and some cars like the AMG are front engine. So, they're all unique, obviously. And like you said, the lap time needs to ultimately arrive at roughly the same time on the stopwatch. But, IMSA's doing a great job with that. I respect their work and their effort, and I do not envy their position whatsoever, because I know how challenging it is to make all sorts of different shapes and sizes fit into one tight box. And they've done a really good job. I'm sure the times right now, I haven't really looked at them too much tonight, but they must reflect that. And it is great. I do prefer personally the driving style of the AMG. It's let's say a higher downforce car, more typical to like a single seater, just with a little bit more weight. So some cars are a bit more nimble and low speed. Some cars are great through the high speed. Some are great over the bumps. But I'm sure you can see the pictures for yourselves when you watch the races, that they're all ebbing and flowing around the track. But that's what makes the GT class so amazing.
Daniel, thank you very much indeed for joining us for this VP Racing Field Pit and Paddock Report. Have a good one this weekend. Enjoy and drive well and be safe.
Always going to send it for you guys. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Daniel Morad joining us there in that VP Racing Field Pit and Paddock Report. Thanks to Shea Adam and Tim Gray for putting that together. seems frankly quite bizarre, Jeremy, that it was a decade and a half ago that he was racing Formula BMW here in North America.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And he won the championship that season for the Antonio Ferrari's Euro International team, beat Esteban Gutierrez into second position that year. And who was third? Well, that would be Alexander Rossi, who, of course, he's sharing the racetrack with this weekend, because Alexander is driving for the one of the Acura teams again this weekend. And so they're back on track again. Yeah, they haven't shared the racetrack on too many occasions since then. Kind of cool to see.
And still, clearly, a very, very competitive driver. I always think it's interesting when you look back at some of the junior Formula and see who was racing with whom and who was beating whom down through the years. We've got a long form interview coming up with Mark Bonanomi in the next couple of weeks, and some of the guys he raced with were very impressive. He raced with and beat, but sometimes the dice or the cards maybe just don't fall your way. So many different elements, as you well know, Jeremy, for a young driver to get to his chosen place in motorsport. It's almost never about actually the driving, to be honest.
Yeah, there's so much to this sport, isn't there? And even from when those guys started out, you know, better part of 15 years ago, it's still, you know, there's still a lot of hurdles to be overcome. But hats off to those guys, and you know, they're all continuing to be professional racing drivers, or now become and have remained professional racing drivers, which of course, you know, not many of their other contemporaries at that stage did.
No, indeed. So, and just while we're on that fact, what's happening with Team USA scholarship this year, Jeremy?
Way too early to even think about that, to be perfectly honest. But hopefully, we'll continue again for the 32nd year. That's the plan, but. Who knows?
Well, keep us in touch. We like to know. Shea Adam, how many drivers have still yet to do their three night laps?
Two, by my count, have not even been behind the wheel of their cars. One of them is one of the Team USA graduates that we are so very, very proud of, Mr. Oliver Askew, who did win the Rolex this year. So we can't ever disassociate that with his name now. The other is Bea Figueiredo, whose birthday it is. And there has been some weird stuff going on the timing. I haven't seen her name listed against the 88 Porsche for Team Hardpoint and EBM. It's Christina Nielsen behind the wheel right now. She's been doing some very good lap times over this session, actually bettering the lap time the Cat Leg set early on. And that car, if you weren't paying attention between the breaks, had an announcement. It now has a new sponsor on the hood, and it's one that's very near and dear to my heart, because Champion Racing is on a GT Porsche again in this category. 25 years after their victory in the GT category, they're back.
The guys from Mobile One The Grid were down at Champion earlier on this week and got some great footage that will be turned into a feature in the coming weeks on Mobile One The Grid, as we've been reporting on over on Midweek Motorsport. The Champion name is back with a Porsche. They're going to tackle Pikes Peak and have a go at breaking some records this year, but also on the Champion logos are on a car. I get the feeling, Shea, that the Champion name is coming back, if I'm honest. From everything I've spoken to Mike Peters and the rest of the team down there, it seems as though they've got the hunger back for competition at Champion.
I sincerely hope so. And I actually, when I read the announcement, I called Christina Nielsen just to let her know how much this means to me on a personal level. And I also pointed out that the last time Christina Nielsen was running in a Porsche with some attachment to Dave Mirage was 2018 at Road America. She and Patrick Long had stickers on the car because that was the first race that we had after we tragically lost Dave back then at a boating accident. But Christina Nielsen and Patrick Long won that race. So when she drives a Porsche with Dave's name on it, he tends to help that car go a little bit better.
Oh, can't wait. It's one of those truly iconic names and livery sets in motorsport. Just following up on something from earlier on, we were talking about Corvette and what's happening next year. John De Geese, man at the head of Sports Car 365. Thank you, John. Put the question to Laura Wantrup Clauser earlier on today. And if you go on to sportscar365.com, you can read the full article. Laura's quote: "We can't have one ready GT3 car for next year, a pure GT3 homologated, the whole kit. It's something we're looking towards for the future, potentially. We're working with INSA to understand, knowing that constraint, what we could do with them for next year, where or when we're able to launch a proper GT3 car, and they're not able to convert the existing Corvette C8R into a full GT3 spec because it's not designed for the platform, but they are hoping that they could bring it into line with GT3 spec, including perhaps adding ABS mandatory in GT3." And Laura said to John, "That's the stuff we're working on with IMSA. Car's only been launched a year, so we're trying to get some return on investment," what we were talking about earlier on. "I don't think anyone thinks IMSA would let us run the car as it is indefinitely. We're trying to help us understand that in order to do GT3 properly, it's going to take us a little time to figure it out." Full story on Sports Car 365. Thank you, John, for that. And so there's part of the answer. So no GT3 spec Corvette for 2022, which potentially could mean no Corvette in GT next year, if no compromise can be made. Your thoughts, please, at IMSA Radio, hashtag RSL Sebring. There is a GT4 Camaro. They learned a lot doing that. Learned some things they possibly won't want to do again, in fairness. Laura was very open about that. But IMSA without a GT GM product? Be odd, wouldn't it? It really would be. As I say, your thoughts, hashtag RSL Sebring, at IMSA Radio, please. Under half an hour to go, and still people improving, including in LMP2, Jeremy Shaw. And in fact, actually at the top as well, I've just noticed. So two new times. Oh, in fact, three new times. Hello, everybody's getting a bit feisty, Mr. Shaw. Jeremy in just a moment.
It's the conditions now are so much better, John, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
It's cooler than it was. The wind has dropped significantly from what it was earlier on this afternoon. So, you know, I think the track is probably kind of evolved back to what it was kind of like this morning. And you know, that time, new best time there for Pipo Durrani, 146.898. The fastest time this morning was set by his teammate Felipe Nasr, 146.2. Fastest time this afternoon session, 47.3. So we're kind of smack in the middle there. Also in LMP2, yeah, Wayne Boyd, great to see the Northern Irishman getting this opportunity with United Autosports. Number one, great to see United Autosports back, but even better to see Wayne Boyd with this opportunity to join that number 22 car alongside Jim McGuire and Guy Smith. You know, fabulous to have Guy back as well in this sport. But Wayne Boyd, what a talent he is. I mean, he's one of those guys that, you know, doesn't come from a lot of money, and he's, you know, kept his career going. He's a three-time winner of the Walter Hayes Trophy at Formula Ford race at Silverstone. He certainly won everything there was to win in Formula Ford in the UK. Tried his hand over here in North America on the road to Indy for a while. It was also in USF 2000, had some success there. He wasn't able to make a career out of that, but he's kept on knocking on the doors. He's a great example of somebody that just works hard to gain opportunities for himself, and here he is now leading the LMP2 class, and just really, really cool to see that. Also, new fastest time, I think, in in GTLM.
Yep.
Matthew Jaminet just gone a little bit quicker as well. Number 79, WeatherTech Porsche, 156.5 for Jaminet. And that's actually the quickest time of the day so far. The fastest time this morning was a 56.7 for Jordan Taylor in the number 3 Corvette. So, yeah, conditions now looking pretty good.
Coming down to 24 minutes to go and still a decent amount of cars out on the track. They're reasonably spaced out at the moment, not too much clumping, although there's a little group of cars heading towards turn 10 at the moment, which is headed by the number 12 Lexus, back out after losing a wheel earlier on. BMW in behind that, then the number 10 Konica Minolta Acura. Those cars just heading around the back of the circuit at the moment. Ollie Askew now in the number 83, Jeremy Shaw.
Yes, so yeah, he's one of the was he the only driver that said that hadn't yet completed his mandatory nighttime running? It doesn't preclude you from starting a race, but if you haven't completed those mandatory few laps, then it does preclude you from driving at nighttime. And Oliver Askew certainly is going to be the guy that team is going to want in that car in the later stages of the race. So they need to get him properly qualified. And he's just out there now, just under a time that was about a tenth of a second away from that car's fastest lap so far, and it's within the LMP3 field is actually spread out quite a lot at the moment. It's still the fastest time was set by Spencer Piggott quite a while ago in that number 74 car, 157.7, which remains, you know, 3/4 of a second away from the quickest time this morning. But Askew now is getting closer to that 2 minute barrier at the moment.
Yeah, very good.
So we got, by the way, John, we've got factory Porsche drivers quickest in GTLM and in GTD, because it's Laurens Vanthoor who's at the top of the charts now in the FAF Porsche, car number 9 in GTD. That time, 2 minutes 1.241.
Something has just happened, which I clearly have fallen through a hole in the space-time continuum because it never normally does. Jerome Bleeker-Mullins just had a spin shear, Adam.
Yeah, I'm in utter disbelief because Jerome Bleeker-Mullins doesn't spin. I mean, things happen to his car that cause him to perhaps lose control of them, such as Baltimore 2011, when a wheel came off during a qualifying session and he pulled into the runoff, got out of the car, ran over, picked up the wheel, opened the passenger door, put the wheel inside the passenger side of the car, and drove back to the pits on three wheels. Yeah, but Bleeker-Mullins doesn't spin.
I remember that. Now you've mentioned that. That was an extraordinary thing to do. I remember we were doing the commentary for it. He stopped and went, oh, the wheel's falling off, right? He's getting out. That's it. He's doing. No, hang on. What's he doing? He's picking up the wheel. He's going to put the wheel in the car and take it back to the pits. Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. Who else did that? Adam Christodoulou did that as well at the Nürburgring, at the Nordschleife.
That's right.
Yes. That just came into my head. He was just, I think, around about the Caracciola Carousel. So he had half the lap to do. And he picked the wheel up and somehow managed to get it back to the pits. Another new fastest lap last time. No, that's Mikkel Jensen before he came into the pits, excuse me. That was a little while ago. But quite clearly, people are enjoying themselves out there at the moment. Gar Robinson in the best of the MP3 cars at the moment for Riley. 157.794 for that car. Rasmus Lindt has just put the best time in for Performance Tech's number 38 Ligier with a 158.2. That puts him in second place in LMP3. Still can't get used to the Paul Miller Racing car with the number one on the side. And it has the number one on the side Twice, actually, because it's number one and it's also first in class at the moment. It has the illuminated number one as well. Oh, no, it doesn't, actually.
P5,
my apologies. It's Lawrence Van Ter for Pfaff in the Porsche, who is leading that, as Jeremy told us a little while ago.
Yeah, you talked about Mikkel Jensen, didn't you, going back to the top in LMP2, just nipping ahead of Wayne Boyd by 0.013 of a second between the PR1 car that now leads the class again, and 52 from the 22 United Autosports entry. As you say, Jensen then brought the car into the pit lane. Improvements there also for Rasmus Lindt, I think, now second in LMP3 in number 38 Performance Tech Motorsports Ligier at a 158.2. That's against Piggott's 157.7.
New fastest time for the core Autosport LMP3. Will surprise no one at all to know that was Colin Brown who's just set that 158.2. Blake Mullen spin and go faster. 58.4 for number 91 car. And a couple of penalties here. It's an interesting one. Shit, Adam, are you seeing what I'm seeing on the race control screen?
I am. Let me just make sure that there aren't any other ones. No. Car 74, penalty. Failure to use autonomous fueling rig drive-through. Car 1, which is that Paul Miller Racing Lamborghini, failure to use autonomous fuel rig drive-through. So in other words, these two teams, instead of using the fuel rig that they're supposed to use in the race, used a fuel can and a guy over the wall. This is a live refueling session, meaning everyone has to be in their full fireproof clothing, and you have to use your fuel rig.
Yeah, very good. Just a drive through, so basically we've seen it, don't do it again, and make sure you adhere to all the safety protocols. Oliver Askew going quicker again, under 2 minutes. Mauro Engel in GTD down to a 2:02.2. We're starting, Jeremy, just to get a few faster times in now. Pretty much throughout the timing screen I'm seeing greens and purples, which means that people are improving. Last 17 minutes of the session, we've said year in, year out with this race, particularly when it has been this time of the year, which is the most times that we've covered it, that you've got to have a car that's good in the last 4 hours of the race in the darkness. And this is what the guys are trying out now, I suppose.
Yeah, indeed so. And yeah, track conditions are pretty good right now. Ambient temperature 26 degrees centigrade, so that's 5 or 6 centigrade less than it was earlier this afternoon. A lot less wind as well, so
it's about 78 Fahrenheit.
Comfortable temperatures now, certainly for this time of year in Florida. It's kind of normal, I think, Shay, is it not?
Very, very typical of particularly Central Florida. It's orange season. And the oranges have to grow in this kind of conditions. So
See, I wish you hadn't said that, because I miss the smell of the orange blossom. That's the thing that I always know I'm getting close to Sebring when we either, normally would be driving up from south, and you start getting close there and you just get that unmistakable smell. Windows down to get acclimatised, no aircon on, listen to the radio. And the smell of the oranges.
See, the thing for me is the Publix orange juice. There is no OJ in the world like Publix OJ, and you can't get it unless you're in the Southeast. So when I see the video moments of the podium where they have the giant carafe of the OJ, and I go over to my fridge and it's not Publix OJ that's in there, that's when I start feeling sad.
Don't talk to me about Publix, because the chicken wings. Now you're talking. You're talking supermarket food. Publix chicken wings. Oh, absolutely worth the trip alone just for that. Under a quarter of an hour to go now, still some quick times coming in. And we mentioned Blake Mullen. Who else has gone quicker? Colin Brown's gone quicker again. down to 58.2 now, Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the fastest times in LMP3, and what's curious to me is that they're not even close to the fastest lap of the race that was set last weekend in the second round of the IPC Championship. That was set by Tony's Kazimitz at 156.0, which is honking on there. That's a good lap. Yeah, the fastest lap we've seen today in LMP3 was earlier in the day, 156.9. That was by the aforementioned Jerome Blekemolen before he decided to turn that car around. And the best time this evening, a 57.7, so a long, long way away from those times that were just set 1 week ago. Curious.
Shay, you'll know this, and I know I should, but because we aren't involved with the IPC this year, I haven't really been keeping up to... we're running the same spec of tyre and the same specification on the car. It's not as if the cars in the IMSA WeatherTech Championship have different restrictor sizes or different tyre construction, is it?
I don't actually know the answer to that. I'm much like you, because we haven't been covering the series. I didn't read the rule book, to be honest. I'll try and find out.
Yeah, it's an odd one. The weather conditions last weekend were, I think, pretty good, Jeremy, for that IPC opener. IPC second round, excuse me. IMSA Prototype Challenge, I should say. To make a point of difference between the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge. Many of the same letters in there. And we can ring the bell now, because, Shea Adam?
All the drivers who needed to get their night laps done are either in the race cars or have been in their race cars. So by my little tick of the chart, they're okay. Now, race control will deem if they get their three laps done on the racetrack. And I'm indebted to Tony DeZino of Michelin. I asked him the question, is there a tire difference between what IPC runs and what we get with the LMP3s in the WeatherTech Championship? No, both the same. Yeah. They run the S8M on the front and the S9M on the rear in both series.
Right, okay. Well, there we go. TDZ, nice to know that you tuned in. Working hard as well. We've been talking about so many people who help make these races happen. We should not forget the PR reps for all the teams. It's been difficult for that group of people to get their jobs done. Some working remotely, some at the track, some sharing the team bubble, some outside of that. It's not exactly one size fits all at all. And yet, the stream of information has continued from the IMSA paddocks. So thank you to all of you for that. Just noticed at Tower Turn, Jeremy, beyond the blue and white curb, there's a little bit of, I think, new concrete there, where in years past we've quite often sort of dug a trench as the week's gone on. It looks like there's a little bit of an extension at the end of the blue and white curb, so we'll have a look at that tomorrow in the daylight. That just means people's running all the way down that and then falling off the end of that.
Oh, yeah.
Racing drivers, eh? Oh. Well, it's been a good day. This has been a good day for pretty much everybody. The amount of issues and problems have been low, and they certainly don't appear to have been major. We have just had a car, as those words go out of my mouth, we've got a car going behind the wall, and that is the number 38, I think I saw flash up on the screen, which will be the Performance Tech Ligier.
Probably, I would think, John, just because
they've
done what they wanted to do, I would think so, yes. Yeah, everybody in this session has completed a minimum of 19 is the fewest number of laps that anybody's done in this session, so that's good. We saw a couple of cars that were kind of parked up early on that took a while to get going. One of them was one of the BMWs, forget which one it was now, but one of the BMWs, but that's been out there and turning laps quite comfortable. And the other one was, the Carnibury 83, was it?
Yes, yeah, I think it was.
That was relatively late out, and that's done 19 laps. The only other car that hasn't done, actually, there's one car that's done less than that. That's number 12, Zach Beach. That was the car, wasn't it, that had the wheel problem early on? Number 12.
Yes.
Yeah. Correct. But has been back out again, as you say. So didn't curtail that car.
No, it's just going back out on the track now, I think, as well.
Right. So they're running towards the end of the evening. So Felipe Nasr in the pits now for Whelan with a 146.898 next to the car. Best time in LMP2 still goes to PR1 Matheson, the 52 with a 150.4. It's Porsche again in GT Le Mans. Matt Campbell out on the track in the WeatherTech 911 RSR 19, 156.5, 157.6 for LMP3. Ooh, we start to line up all the classes here. This could be good. And as I say that, that's a new fastest lap for Gerald Blakemolen in that category with a 157.2. So that's number 91, Riley, in LMP3. I tell you what, Jeremy, if LMDH takes off, DPI 2.0 takes off the way we think it is, we're going to have some cracking drivers in privately owned and run prototypes, aren't we? When you see all these guys jumping into LMP2s and LMP3s to get a bit of downforce experience, I think you know, 2023 could be absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah, I think the signs are looking pretty promising, aren't they? And I think, you know, I can't wait to see what that new breed of cars is like. Yeah, we've got a pretty good breed right now. But there's certainly, I think, some very good signs that there could be an uptick of interest even more. We've already heard several manufacturers announce confirm their intentions to come in, and I think there might well be one or two more as well. Still plenty of time to do so, I would suggest.
At IMSA Radio, still time to drop us a line, hashtag RSL Sebring, inside the last 7 minutes of this Thursday's action. Busy day on Friday. Our coverage all detailed at www.imsaradio.com. Another Mazda race, fairly early doors tomorrow, 9 o'clock local time. Will be on the air in sound and vision, no blocks, no breaks, USA and around the world. Around about 5 minutes or so, 10 minutes or so before that. Then the second Porsche Carrera Cup North America race. And let's be honest, if they are anywhere near as exciting as the first two today for each of those classes, we'll be very happy bunnies indeed. And we will roll pretty much straight after that. That's just after 10 o'clock, by the way, for the Porsches. Oh, now, off at the far side of the circuit. Bit of dust being thrown up.
33.
Thank you, Shea.
Welcome.
Your eyes are better than ours in the darkness.
Your second fastest time now, I think, is there not, for Renger van der Zande in the Chip Ganassi Cadillac.
Is that the first time Renger's been in that car today?
No, but first time we've kind of noticed him, perhaps.
Yeah, so just running through tomorrow again. So after the Porsche race, we've got a little bit of a gap, and then we're into live sound and vision coverage of the WeatherTech qualifying. GTD, two qualifying sessions. It's the first time we'll have seen this, of course, because we had the qualifying race at the Rolex 24 at Daytona. So silver and bronze qualify for grid position, first of all, for 15 minutes. And then we have another 15 minutes where any driver other than who qualified in that previous session goes for points.
My head hurts.
And it's position and points for GTLM in that session as well. And then we'll have LMP.
It's not position, it's just points, isn't it? the second session.
Just points.
GTLM is position and points.
Because
it's both the GT classes out in that second session. P3 come next. That has to be an under 30 bronze or silver. And then, of course, we have position and points for LMP2. That has to be a bronze only. And DPI position and points can be anybody. And that will take us through to a quarter to one. Before we start getting ready at about 2:25, all these local times in Eastern time zone, for the Alan J 120, the Alan J Automotive Network 120 for the IMSA Mission and Pilot Challenge. 2 hours to round off the day. Fairly early finish, actually. Just after 4:30 in the afternoon local time, which means, 8:30 in the UK, 9:30 in Europe. What a great way to spend your Friday afternoon and evening if you're working from home. So make sure you join us on IMSA Radio and IMSA TV. All of that, by the way, on imsaradio.com. And for everything but the Michelin Pilot Challenge, we have no blocks, no breaks in sound and vision coverage for you. If you're travelling around, of course, you get the audio as well, if you so desire, on the player at RS2. We like to keep you covered. Last 3 minutes then. Let's have a little chat with Jeremy Shaw then, here in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. I would think for most teams, Jeremy, they will think today has been a productive day.
Absolutely right. I think so. A few minor hiccups for a few teams, but
and even as we say that, we've got the right Porsche off the road, and that is Patrick Long behind the wheel of that car. He's gone straight on at the hairpin, I would reckon, in front of the hotel at turn 7. Is that a bit of thunder and lightning in the background as well, that I can see lighting up the sky? I thought I could see it from another shot, and then I convinced myself it was just the headlights coming back. But I think up to the north of the track at the moment, there's a bit of an electrical storm going on. So probably just as well we're getting finished now. Sorry, Jeremy, I interrupted you. A productive day for most of the teams, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely right. And and most of them have run for the vast majority of the session too.
True.
I thought the number 48 car even has come out again towards the end here. We've seen some good lap times towards the conclusion of this session. Actually, Mikkel Jensen just improved again in the LMP2, fastest there in car number 8 at 150.2 for the Danish driver, which is about 0.3 seconds away from the time he turned this morning. In pretty good conditions, first thing in the opening practice session of the day, but no, it has been a good session, and we're getting very, very close now to what you, I know, like to see on the timing chart, which is each of the classes perfectly defined. The only outlier at the moment is the number 24 BMW with Jesse Krohn, who has just actually set that car's best time. He's just behind the fastest, the LMP3 car. So all the GTLMs except for one quicker than the LMP3s. But other than that, we've got DPI, 7 DPI cars out front, then the 5 LMP3s, LMP2s, excuse me, then 4 of the 5 GTLMs with that one outlier, then the rest of the LMP3 cars, and then the remainder of the field of 13 cars in GTD behind that. And it has been good. We've seen, I think, some very competitive sessions and very competitive times in each of the classes.
The reliability we almost take for granted now, Shea. Jeremy and I could easily wax lyrical about days like this, which seem not too very long ago, but are probably 30 plus years ago, where the catalogue of issues would have been long, and it would have taken us 10 or 15 minutes at the end of the day just to go through, then so-and-so had a problem, and then something dropped off the other car, and they're changing an engine, their gearbox has gone again for the third time, they had a different, we just kind of, even on the bumps of Sebring, we almost now take it for granted that these cars are just going to pound round.
Yeah, and 30 plus years ago, that would be BS, but before Shay. But yeah, you're right. The reliability has dramatically increased over time. I have been taking notes over the cars that have had issues over the span of a day. I've taken 9 notes total over the course of 3 sessions today. So that tells you just how good they are. But this is the track that tends to show up the issues that are lingering in the cars. And even last year in the sprint race that we had in July, we did have some cars with some strange mechanical issues that reared their head. And it was the only instance all year long. I'm thinking about Magnus in particular. They had a gearbox issue, if memory serves, from their Lamborghini when they ran here. Didn't have an issue the rest of the year long. But Sebring tends to rise the gremlins that otherwise can hide throughout the course of the year.
Yeah, wakes them up for sure. Checkered flag is out. Colin Brown improved on his last lap there for Core Autosport. Fourth place for the number 54, 158, 116. But other than that, I don't see any improvements on the last lap. No, indeed not. So it's still Whelan at the top of DPI with the 31 Cadillac. PR1 with the 52 Orica for P2. The Porsche of WeatherTech, the 79 car in GT Le Mans. Still a couple of cars still to finish, by the way. Dylan Murray for Riley and the Ligier, number 91 in LMP3. And Lawrence Vanter for Porsche, number 9, the Pfaff Motorsports car in GT Daytona. 2012 for GT Daytona. What were the lap times that those new Porsche Carrera Cup cars were doing earlier on? They were seriously quick. We'll just see the last few cars home, whether you're at the track or further afield. A reminder to join us again tomorrow. Check imsaradio.com for our broadcast times, which will auto-correct to your browser time and account for the time change in the US last weekend. Wow, that was a lot of curb that you heard being clattered there by the Ali Cadillac coming through Tower Turn, now into the Jean de Bian Benz. The Ali Cadillac, excuse me. Been a long day. Now through the Le Mans corner at 16 and down the back straight. Who is in that car at the moment? It's Simon Pagenaud. He's actually taken the checkered flag, so he's just doing a quick in-lap. So I don't think there's anybody else actually still to take the checkered flag. No, there isn't. So it was only Colin Brown who improved on that last lap. Pagenaud making the most of the time on track to have a good in-lap, keep the heat in the Michelin tyres so that the tyre technician can have a good look at them. That brings us to the end of what has been a fascinating day of our coverage for practice of IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and a couple of absolutely brilliantly entertaining races for Idemitsu Mazda MX-5 and the Porsche Carrera Cup North America. A quick final word for all of our IMSA officials, especially all of those down in the brightly illuminated pit lane at the moment. And Johnny Knotts, it's nice to see you down there as well on the TV pictures. Pass on our best to everybody, won't you? Thank you all for joining us, to our technical teams in both at the track in North Carolina at NASCAR Productions, and of course Tim Greer and his team down in London. Up in London, excuse me, as well as my co-commentators, Shea Adam and Jeremy Shaw. I'm John Hindle from the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. What a great Thursday. It's Fast Friday tomorrow. More racing, plus qualifying for IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and the Alan J Automotive Networks 120 for the Michelin Pilot Challenge. Pretty busy day. Sounds like another cracker. See you then. Good night. God bless.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, check imsaradio.com and subscribe to IMSA Radio wherever you get your podcasts.